This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Welcome to Radio Parallax. It's Thursday, it's 5 p.m., and you are presumably, most likely, on your way home in your car after a job well done at work. This show was produced, as it always is, by Edward McMillan, and joining me, as he always does, in the booth today is Zach Palaska. Now, this is our first show after Labor Day, a time in which politics generally starts heating up in California. A bit of a follow-up on the story we talked about last week on the show, George Bush's visit to Stockton. Did anyone see a picture of George Bush with Bill Simon, the man he was purportedly in California to campaign for? I think I did see one taken in Los Angeles the day after, but for a guy who's here to help boost the Simon campaign, he certainly was giving Bill Simon a wide berth. Surprisingly, the Bush administration backed Richard Reardon last spring in the primary. Reardon is a moderate Republican and is pro-choice, not necessarily a man that sees eye-to-eye with the Bush camp, but I think that the Bush camp was tired of seeing conservative Republicans drive off the cliff with their flags flying like Dan Lundgren did a few years ago to lose to Gray Davis initially, and they were hoping to back a winner so that he wouldn't take along several congressional seats with him. The House is in danger of going over to the Democrats this November. I thought just for this show, I wanted to pull up something I've kept on my answering machine since last spring, when as a registered Republican, I was received a call from Hollywood from Arnold Schwarzenegger and I know a lot of times on our show we do celebrity impersonations. This one apparently is real, from Arnold, that asked me to go out and vote for Reardon.
Hi, this is Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I hope that you will vote at the Republican primary on Tuesday. I also hope that you vote for my very dear friend, Dick Reardon, because he's the only Republican that can become our next governor. Thank you.
Well, I think Arnold had the call right last spring. It doesn't look as though Bill Simon has a snowball's chance in hell against Gray Davis, who's not a very popular governor, but it did have the foresight to spend $10 million in the primary to buy ads that attacked Richard Reardon. It's a dirty business, politics. And on another follow-up, I guess you might say, our last week's program on psychiatry in the courtroom got surprisingly little opposition from people I know who I expected to disagree with some of the points we put forward. And we're still working on our website, but you can write us at info@radioparallax to give us any feedback on that show or anything you hear today or anything you hear on future shows. Now, in today's program, we will be joined by our Hollywood correspondent. We always love going down to L.A. and hear what's going on with David Rosenblum. We will go to our archives. We meant to do a second segment last week when we talked about our good friend Charlton Heston, so we're going to air a previously recorded segment with him because he's been in the news revealing that he has some of the early signs of Alzheimer's disease. I'm reading a very interesting book about an inventor named Philo T. Farnsworth, which, unbeknownst to most of us, was the man who invented television. The author has been appearing on National Public Radio of late to talk about this book, so I'm reading it. Very interesting. Shane Carpenter will be with us. He's a production manager over at Access Sacramento to talk about the early history of radio. It seems that one of the characters in the Farnsworth case, David Sarnoff, also turned up in some chicanery in the earliest days of radio, and Shane will be here to talk to us about that. In our last segment, Vlado Zarevica will come on the show to talk about the surprising amount of controversy over who really takes credit for inventing the first airplane. We'd like to introduce a new part of the program that we're going to have every week, which is called the Osama Count. Today is day 359 of the search for Osama bin Laden. Of course, the first anniversary of September 11th will come next week. With all the talk lately about attacking Baghdad and what a threat Saddam Hussein is, I think we should keep focused and keep in mind the fact that we were attacked last year by Al-Qaeda under the leadership of Osama bin Laden. Let's keep looking for him. This is day 359 of the search for Osama and counting. We'll keep you posted. Comedian Dave Barry will be making a local appearance, local in terms of showing up in Santa Rosa next week. We will be in attendance here and give you a report back from Radio Parallax on one of America's great humorists. We think very highly of Mr. Barry on this show, and we'd like to excerpt one of his more memorable pieces where he commented on SUVs. If there's one thing this nation needs, it's bigger cars. That's why I'm excited that Ford is coming out with a new Mound of Metal that will offer consumers even more total road-squatting mass than the current leader in the humongous car category, the popular Chevrolet Suburban Subdivision, the first passenger automobile designed to be, right off the assembly line, visible from the moon. The new Ford is called the Excursion. I expect that in the TV commercials it will be shown splashing through rivers, charging up rocky mountainsides, swinging on vines, racing through the surf, and fighting giant sharks hundreds of feet below the ocean surface. All the daredevil things that cars do in sport utility vehicle commercial world where nobody drives on an actual road. In the real world, of course, nobody drives sport utility vehicles in the forest, because when you have paid upwards of $40,000 for transportation, the last thing you want is squirrels pooping on it. No, if you want a practical off-road vehicle, you get yourself a 1973 American Motors Gremlin, which combines the advantage of not being worth worrying about with the advantage of being so ugly that poisonous snakes flee from it. In the real world, what people mainly do with their sport utility vehicles, as far as I can tell, is try to maneuver them into and out of parking spaces. I base this statement on my observations in a local supermarket, where many of the upscale patrons drive Chevrolet Subdivisions. I've noticed that these people often purchase just a couple of items, maybe a bottle of diet water and a 2-ounce package of low-fat dried carrot shreds, and put them into the back of their Subdivisions, which have about the same cargo capacity in cubic feet as Finland. And comes the scary part, getting the Subdivision out of the parking space. This is a challenge because the driver apparently cannot, while sitting in the driver's seat, see all the way to the rear end of the vehicle. I drive a compact car. On a number of occasions, I have found myself trapped behind a Subdivision backing directly toward me, its massive metal butt looming high over my head. I've tried honking my horn, but the Subdivision drivers can't hear me because they're always talking on cellular phones the size of chiclets. The bigger your car, the smaller your phone is their motto. I don't know whom they're talking to. Maybe they're trying to contact somebody in the same area code as the rear end of their cars so they can find out what's going on back there. All I know is I'm thinking of carrying marine flares so I can fire them into the air as a warning to Subdivision drivers that they're about to run me over. Although, frankly, I'm not sure they'd care if they did. A big reason these people bought these vehicles is safety, in the sense of, you personally will be safe, although every now and then you may have to clean out the remains of other unfortunate motorists out of your wheel wells.
Dave Barry is a funny guy, and I hope that by the time we're on the air next week, we'll have some anecdotes to tell you about our trip to go see him in Santa Rosa. All right, going now, as we like to do, to Hollywood. We have our Hollywood correspondent to update us on what's going on down in Tinseltown. David, are you there?
Doug, you there?
I am.
Hey, listen, I got to tell you about, I'm really excited. I got to tell you about my new Naked Oscar Night project I'm doing, producing TV retread movies.
I suppose things like, what, The Addams Family?
Yeah, Lost in Space, McHale's Navy, et cetera, et cetera. It's a slam dunk, Doug. Money in the bank. But I am ahead of the curve on one show that's way overdue for the silver screen.
What, Bonanza?
Nope.
Hill Street Blues?
Nope. Gilligan's Island.
Didn't they do that already, David?
Made for TV, yeah, but I'm talking big screen here. And I'm also excited to say I've secured the rights to the making of Gilligan's Island, the movie.
For the Discovery Channel, one would suppose, huh?
This film is going to surprise many. For one, it's not a pure comedy, per se.
What do you mean, per se?
My vision is darker, Doug. Film noir, even.
In noir, Gilligan's Island?
Probably nobody survives.
What, like in a perfect storm?
Oh, great. You just ruined the movie for me. I haven't seen that yet. You're telling me nobody lives? Great. Well, let me tell you, by the way, I have indeed signed Wolfgang Peterson to do Gilligan's Island for us.
That was the director of A Perfect Storm.
Who better? It was Wolfgang or James Cameron, but Jimmy's busy shooting Titanic 2. And we got Industrial Light and Magic to do the effects. I mean, this is brilliant.
Well, I suppose the shipwreck of the Minnow is sure to be gripping.
Audiences do enjoy a good maritime disaster. By the time we're done, Wolfgang's Das Boot is going to look like, I don't know, the Yellow Submarine.
Yeah, but David, can Peterson do comedy?
Of course he can do comedy. Look, he did commercials in Germany for Gisela's House of Waffles, and I understand he used puppets to great comedy effect.
Well, who's going to play Gilligan?
That's easy. Will Smith, I hope.
Fresh from his triumph playing James West in The Wild Wild West.
Interesting casting, was it not?
You know, I got trapped on a flight with that film, and all I can say is, David, thank God for air sickness bags.
Look, Will is versatile. He can do everything. He's proven he can do white guys from 60s TV, and, you know, I mean, he'll do a rap Gilligan theme, and it'll take us platinum.
Well, we're all looking forward to that.
Will did do the definitive Ali. He's amazing. He's got the stature for eternal themes, Doug. He does.
Well, David, which eternal themes?
Isolation on desert island, battlings for survival with limited tools, man against nature, man against man, you know.
Like Robinson Crusoe.
Exactly.
Only slapstick.
I'm trying to tell you, very little broad comedy in this one. An odd falling overboard, maybe, but that's it. No shortwave radios made of coconut shells, no beauty contests, and no cameo appearances by Charles Nelson Reilly.
Well, who do you envision as the skipper?
Brando.
Marlon Brando.
No, Murray Brando.
Brando.
Marlon slimmed down, Doug. He's no fatter than Apocalypse Now. Think Colonel Kurtz.
Only beached on a desert island.
Right. This skipper is a brooding, jealous sea salt. Complex, calculating, envious of the professor's charm and the Howell's wealth. Marlon's skipper will be a modern Captain Ahab.
Only fat and on dry land.
He's got his demons. When Brando says little buddy, it'll send shivers down your spine. He's so good, we're waving his 300-pound weight claws. And you'll be pleased to see the rest of the cast, Doug. Top-notch. Halle Berry as Ginger, Bill Nye the Science Guy as a professor, and as Marianne, Cameron Diaz, if we can get her.
Well, what if you can't?
Two words, Doug. Ruth Buzzy.
Now, isn't she another one of those has-been clients you try to shop around?
Has-been, quote-unquote, is a relative term, Doug. She's older, but Ruth has just had eyelid tucks.
Well, who's going to be the millionaire and his wife?
A casting coup for us, Judi Dench and Anthony Hopkins.
The Howells are British now.
Yeah, a somber pair, upper class, billionaires, in fact, with a B.
Why would billionaires rent a small boat for a three-hour tour?
Well, they're bitter, alcoholics, you know, I mean, they're crazy.
This is not really the familiar Thurston and Lovey we've been used to.
Yeah, I mean, think more Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf on a Tiny Tropical Island. And for the Latino market, we haven't forgotten them, Doug. We're adding a new empowering character for this movie. Charo is going to play the Howell's spunky maid.
Charo?
Yeah.
You're not really going to kill everybody in this film, are you?
It's stark realism, my friend. We might do that. And we may even shoot in black and white. Just look for adult themes and sexual tension. That's all I can say.
I'm afraid to ask.
Well, I mean, come on. Didn't you ever wonder about the whole Ginger Marianne thing?
With the professor?
Yeah. I mean, he was the only red-blooded male around. Come on, admit it.
Well, is that going to work with Bill Nye?
Well, look, he may appear mild-mannered, but try downing a few daiquiris with him. Bill's hilarious.
Why Anthony Hopkins?
Tony's proved he can nail the whole cannibalism thing. That's why.
Cannibalism?
Well, when food runs scarce, you know, people get desperate. And besides, it might not be full-blown cannibalism, maybe just a few toes. We're going to push envelopes in this movie.
Well, I think we've heard enough, David.
Maybe we won't kill everyone, but we got to bump off a few here and there. We got to.
Well, maybe Lovey could knock off Thurston after he has an affair with Charo.
Maybe. So look for the Christmas release of Gilligan's Perfect Island.
Well, David, thank you very much. We got to go.
But we still need a snappy subtitle. Maybe, I don't know, Catfish on a Hot Tin Roof?
That's catchy.
With the seventh seal? You know, get it? It's like seal, sea lion?
I don't think so.
McCabe and Mrs. Howell?
No.
Blender in the Eelgrass?
No.
Alice Doesn't Swim Here Anymore?
If I come up with one, will you quit?
The Thin Blue Fishing Line?
Okay, try this. Sex, Lies, and a Coconut Shell Shortwave.
I think that's it.
David Rosenblum is a regular contributor to Radio Parallax. Next on the program, we wanted to do another excerpt from a previously recorded interview we had with movie actor Charlton Heston. As we mentioned on last week's program, Mr. Heston is not someone we always or even often agree with politically, but he is certainly a gentleman, and we've enjoyed having him on the show, and we wanted to excerpt a program that we aired last year. What's this we're hearing about your efforts to promote landmines?
Well, That is incorrect. I am not promoting anything per se. I'm just helping the ALMMA get a new positive message out to the general public.
Who exactly is the ALMMA?
The American Landmine Manufacturers Association, Doug.
These are America's manufacturers of devices that blow up when stepped on.
That's what landmines do, Douglas. And besides, we're the world leaders in the field of touch-triggered chemical energy devices.
Well, I've heard that the USA was number one in making landmines.
Well, it's true, partner. The naysayers who don't think Uncle Sam has know-how in industry anymore have never seen the kind of quality product we export. It's amazing, Doug.
So a dictator who wants to create a no-man's land around his palace can thank the can-do spirit still found in manufacturers of reliable and cheap contact explosives.
Well, I didn't say cheap, Doug. If you want something shoddy, something cheap, you'll have to look elsewhere. Libya, Iran, North Korea make cheap knockoffs. I wouldn't touch them with a 10-foot pole myself. They're plain unsafe.
Well, with all due respect, Mr. Heston, aren't devices that blow the legs off creatures unlucky enough to step on them inherently unsafe?
Well, I can proudly state that the ALMMA made products that are the safest you can buy. And this is a tribute to the care that goes into the manufacture of them. You know, I don't think any other industry, even semiconductors, shows the innovation and precision we bring to our finished products. You know, people around the world know this, and they buy American, Doug. They just go like a house of fire when you need them.
Well, when do you need landmines? Congress heard testimony indicating they had no utility for the Pentagon, and the Pentagon hired spokesmen to say they were useful to manufacture just the same.
Well, they are.
For whom?
For the honest citizens of the world who'd wish to purchase them. It's a free country, after all. You can buy what you want.
Well, now, Mr. Heston, which honest citizens need landmines? You know, the late Princess Diana was leading a very successful effort to point out.
Listen, partner, if you want to take military advice from a gal who married British royalty, divorced, then cavorted with Egyptian playboys, well, be my guest. I'd rather listen to generals, heirs of the revolution, that cut the ties to British monarchs when they say they are plenty useful. And they are plenty useful.
Well, these are generals hired to say that such a thing is useful, and they're hired by the manufacturers of the very product.
Look, I work for the ALMMA because they need a spokesman, Doug. I believe in the right to bear arms. Can a military man go to work for someone who makes a good damn product?
But tell me, why landmines are good?
I did. They do a wonderful business.
What are you doing to support ALMMA?
Well, we're explaining to the public that our newest devices are not anti-personnel. That phrase sounds so negative. We want to be positive, Doug. And by the way, ALMMA has pledged not to market their products to children.
So kids will not be targeted by the landmine
manufacturers. No way, no how. No sales to anyone under 15. Or we like to call them pro-pacification.
Pacification. Devices that blow whatever steps on them to kingdom come.
Well, doesn't this sound better, Doug?
Well, I guess it does.
You're damn well right it does.
But, Mr. Heston, don't you think there is something wrong if the civilized nations of the world desire an end to landmines and U.S. manufacturers stand alone in opposition?
Well, I certainly do not. Other nations are unlikely to stop using them.
Well, why? We don't see poison gas used since World War I.
Coincidence.
Soldiers are not shot with hollow point rounds. A lot of combat vets owe their lives and limbs to the warring nations of the world adhering to such agreements. Isn't it time to add landmines to the list?
No, my friend. In my opinion, it is not that time.
Well, why not?
Not at all.
Why not?
Suppose the drug war needs to up the ante or something.
So if we need to clamp down on drug producers, we'll mine their fields.
Maybe. The American Landmine Manufacturers Association, we say, a case of mines a week. That's all we ask. They're good for the economy, and that is good for you, my friend. Responsible use, Doug. That's our motto. Responsible use. You wouldn't let your kids use the oven without supervision, would you? Or the chainsaw? You wouldn't let your granny stroll on the freeway, would you?
No, I'm sure I wouldn't.
All right.
That was movie actor Charlton Heston. Let's now take a break. We're up against it on time. You are listening to KDVS 90.3. And after this short break, we'll return with Shane Carpenter to talk about the early days of radio. This is Radio Parallax.